Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 404. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we as sure as heck like you. We have another jam-packed show for you this week. Let's get started by introducing our first guest. Evan Wolfson was the founder and president of Freedom to Marry, the campaign that won marriage equality in the United States, and he is widely considered the architect of the movement that led to nationwide victory in 2015. During the 1990s, he served as co-counsel in the historic Hawaii marriage case that launched the ongoing global movement for the freedom to marry. He's the author of the book Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry, and Time magazine named him one of the 100 most influential people in the world. In 2012, Evan received the Barnard Medal of Distinction alongside President Barack Obama, and he currently appears in the civil rights documentary The Freedom to Marry, which is being released digitally on June 6th via Roco Films in the U.S. and Canada. But right this second, he's here with us. Evan, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you very much.
I should say welcome back to This Show Is So Gay. You were first on our show 8 years ago. How do you even begin to wrap your mind around everything that has happened in the past 8 years?
Well, there are a couple things that happened in the past 8 years that I'd rather not wrap my mind around, but most of the stuff is really quite great and a lot to be proud of and happy with. And I am really excited about how far we've come and really determined to keep going because, of course, we have a lot more to do.
We have to start there, right? Because when we talk about marriage equality, we've talked about this a lot, you know, over the past 8-9 years on the show, we get worried a little bit about complacency, Evan, that people think, oh, there's not more work to do. There's more work to do, is there not?
Well, there's always more work to do. And now in these times, of course there is. Our country is on the wrong track. The election was a catastrophe, not just LGBT people, but so many communities and values that we care about are under assault, whether it be immigrants or Muslims or people of color or women or LGBT people or just world peace or the environment. I mean, there's so much to be done that we owe it to our country as well as the people we love to get in there and do the work that's needed to get the country back on track. That said, let's not make a bad thing worse than it is.
Right.
There's a lot to celebrate. There's a lot that we won and gained that we still have and that are the momentum and allies and force and example that we can share as we keep pushing forward, including our success in transforming hearts and minds and then the law and winning marriage. We saw the victory in Taiwan, our first foothold in Asia, where the High Court ruled in favor of the freedom to marry. This is the momentum that we have built and that we have to keep engaging and work with as we push forward.
Yeah. Talk to me about the push and pull between individuals and organizations, right? We have in this movement individuals who are working so hard and these amazing personalities, and then we have the organizations. In looking at, you know, the model that you've adapted, that you've used to create such change, where is that balance between individuals and organizations?
Well, in the very broadest sense, we need both. As individuals, we each have an opportunity and a responsibility to make a difference. Each one of us can reach some people that others may not be as good at reaching. Each one of us has people who care about us, people who are like us, people who we know how to talk to. Each one of us can contribute time and our voice and our emotions and our money to the causes that are important and make a difference in that way. And then when we combine our individual efforts, when we add to our individual efforts, we have the power of the collective effort. And we need organizations, we need campaigns, we need to support the teamwork that magnifies and multiplies our individual contributions. So these are not either or, we actually need both. It took both to win the freedom to marry. To win the freedom to marry, we needed millions of conversations. We needed people telling their stories, talking to the ones they love, their coworkers and others, being an example, sharing their values, whether gay or non-gay. Those millions of conversations were the chief engine of change. But at the same time, the conversations alone were not enough. We needed a campaign. We needed key partner organizations like the legal groups and others to go in and do the work in the courts, to do the work in the political sphere, to use the climate that our individual efforts created and to push for the legal gain. So it's not an either or. We need both. The one other quick thing I'll say is there are at least two different kinds of organizations. There are the pillar organizations, the organizations who we have built over the years in our movement, just as other movements have had to do, that we rely on to be able to deal with crises that come up and to keep pushing forward. Groups like the ACLU and Lambda Legal and GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders in Massachusetts, and the National Center for Lesbian Rights. These key institutions our movement has built, and others at the local level as well. But there also there's another kind of organization, and that's what the one that I built, Freedom to Marry, which was built as a campaign. It didn't do everything. It didn't jump from thing to thing. It didn't respond to every opportunity or every crisis. It focused on a goal. It drove a strategy. It stayed with the strategy, and it brought others in to make sure that what the strategy required was fulfilled. And when we fulfilled our strategy and achieved our goal, we closed that campaign down. Now, that's a very effective model.
Yeah.
It got a lot done, and that's what the documentary shows. It shows how this was done. But we were able to do that by drawing on partner organizations like the pillar organizations, the institutions I talked about. So again, it's not an either-or. We need all these things, and those are the kinds of elements of success that the film shows and that we can share now in the work ahead, not just for LGBT people, but for the other causes we care about.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk more about that model. As someone who's been in the classroom, not just doing this work, but also teaching about law and social change, what's one of those mistakes that we make as a movement that you would like to just wave that Wolfson magic wand and just say, okay, we have to stop making this mistake?
Well, I think a perfect example is it's false either or.
Yeah.
People say, I don't want to work on this because it's not that, or we can't do this until we do that. And, of course, it is good to be clear in our goal and clear in our strategy and to really focus, but we don't have to impose false either ors on ourselves. A related point, and one that I often teach, is not everybody's going to agree on everything. There was never a point where every LGBT movement person or organization agreed on marriage or agreed on the strategy. But you don't need every, you just need enough. And so what we focused on was bringing enough people in, bringing enough organizations, enough work to achieve the strategy and get the job done. We didn't spend our time, I didn't spend my time fighting with people who said, I don't want to work on marriage, I want to work on something else.
Right.
Or I don't believe in this, I don't believe in that. I went out and got the people I could get. I got the partners I could get. I tried to persuade, but I also didn't get stuck. And that's, I think, an important lesson to share. And, it's obviously easier to say than to do. We made many mistakes. I had many grumpy days. There were many missed opportunities. But all in all, we did a pretty good job of keeping our eyes on the prize, of really being clear about our goal, clear about our strategy, and sticking with that work, and conveying hope. And I think that's the final one I'd end with. It's very easy, particularly with this awful Trump-Pence regime and so many things under siege, it's very easy to wallow in the negative, to just constantly think about all the terrible things and try to spin out every bad scenario. And I think that's a mistake. I think it's good to acknowledge that there are things that are bad, there are things that need to change, but then focus on the pathway and convey hope, because that's what brings people in and that's how you're going to get what you want.
Yeah. Talk to our listeners about the importance of youth involvement, right? Not just focusing on communities that have been established in this work for so long, but getting new communities involved in this work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in this work and other work.
Yeah.
Young people are a tremendously effective sources of hope and energy and can really make a difference. And one of the things that I hope that this film does,
yeah,
I think it has been having this effect, is inspire many young people, not just LGBT, but people in other causes and other communities and even other countries, to find their power and to see an example of being able to make a change, to believe in a change, to believe in your power, and then the elements of how you do it. What does it take to win? And one of the lessons, of course, is it doesn't happen overnight. So it's good to start when you're young. I started, in my work, I wrote my law school thesis back in 1983. on why we should fight for the freedom to marry and what the pathway forward would be and how this would be an engine of transformation. I certainly didn't think back in 1983 I was going to spend the next 32 years of my life
right.
doing it. But now, having won, I feel very good about that chapter of my life. And I'm glad I started young and got engaged and was able to stick with it and be able to live to see the fruits of the victory.
Yeah. Can we just talk on a personal level? You've mentioned setbacks. How do you overcome them? I think that's one of those issues that we do get derailed sometimes by these setbacks, particularly when they're on a national scale. When Evan Wolfson pumps his fist in the air and says, I'm overcoming this, how can we all do that?
I think it's very important to start with hope.
Yeah.
Start with belief. Believe you can win. Believe you can do it. Believe others will respond. It may take 6.5 times of saying it to them before they're persuaded, but you can't write it off. You can't just assume that because things are not where you want them to be, that's the way it's going to be. Don't empower inaction. Empower action. Empower movement. Empower others to join you. And the way to do that is by conveying hope. And then you have to add to hope a focus on what is your pathway? What is it going to take to win? And then you have to be tenacious. You have to stick with that.
Yeah. The Freedom to Marry coming out, it's being released digitally. Why is this important for all of us to see right now?
Because number one, I think it is good to celebrate what
yes.
we achieved, how far we've come, to remember the history, remember what it took, remember how hard it was, remember how it wasn't inevitable, but nor was it impossible. We did the work and we did achieve a huge transformation, not only in the law, but in hearts and minds. And number two, even though the film really is quite emotional and very dramatic and very suspenseful, and it's not really a didactic documentary, it does show the elements of success. It shows how to do it. And because there's so much more we need to do, we need to remember and understand the elements of change so we can apply them in the work ahead.
I love it. What's coming up for you, Evan? What are you excited about?
Well, I'm very lucky in that one of the happy consequences of success is people now want to say, well, how did you do it? And they want to hear the elements, the lessons. And so I'm getting to spend my time now, the bulk of my time, advising and assisting other movements, other causes, other countries, and sharing these lessons. And I get to be part of a lot of causes and battles that I really care a lot about. So whether it's, you know, the win of the Freedom to Marry this week in Taiwan, extremely gratifying. It's now our 7th out of 7 continents. We already had Antarctica, but we hadn't had Asia. And that's really thrilling and exciting. Being able to work with immigration activists, gun control activists, and others that I'm advising and getting to talk with really is a chance to learn and to be part of something else I care about. So I feel like I'm in a really lucky position right now. And that's good, because focusing on the good and being grateful for what you have and being determined to keep moving forward is the perfect antidote to the awfulness of Trump and Pence and the terrible regime that has temporarily afflicted our country. And I really feel very committed to getting the country back on track.
And you are doing that. Again, listeners, we are here with Evan Wolfson, the founder and president of Freedom to Marry. He is appearing in the documentary, The Freedom to Marry, which releases digitally on June 6th via Roku Films in the U.S. and Canada. I hope, Evan, this is what I do hope for you, that you have seen all of the expressions of gratitude that come your way from all over the community. I would imagine you've had many such moments where people have come up to you and thanked you.
Well, thank you for saying that. And yeah, you know, one of the great things about working on something like marriage is it is about joy. It is about family. It is about love. And I do every day get to hear from people who share their stories, either of themselves or their children or their friends or families. And it always is very, very touching. When, you know, when I got the heads up from the team I'm working with in Taiwan that we had won, I was about to board a plane and I was tweeting and trying to send out the materials and so on, the information about it. When I landed, I was able to get back online and saw the news articles and the coverages and the photos of the joy of the crowds in Taiwan, gay people and non-gay people celebrating, much as we did here in the United States every time we won, was really touching. It brought a tear to my eye again.
Oh, it's incredible, incredible work. Evan, we always need more heroes in our community, and you are on that list of people who have dedicated their life to really making a difference, and you've done it. The gratitude is overwhelming, and I love that you're just continuing to share these lessons, because it really has made a difference, and it will continue to do so. Evan Wolfson, thank you for everything that you've done.
Thank you.
guess that's it. The guilt arises, fills the room you left me in, and I'm alone.
All right, folks, and we are back with another incredible guest. Let me set this up for you. On June 11th, 2017, from Hollywood and Highland to West Hollywood, instead of a pride parade right there in California meant to celebrate our past progress, instead, we're going to be doing something called hashtag Resist March, which is going to be a gathering to ensure our futures. This is fascinating stuff. Here to talk all about it is Brian Pendleton, who is the hashtag Resist March founder and organizer, who in his spare time is also, you know, a Los Angeles Police and Fire Pension Commissioner. But we're going to talk about hashtag Resist March. Brian, welcome to this show, Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And from henceforth, we can just call it Resist March if you want.
We could do that. That would be a little bit easier. So why Resist March, Brian? Can't we just walk? What are we resisting?
I mean, look, we're resisting a lot of things.
Yeah.
We're resisting the over 100 laws that are going through state legislatures right now that are taking direct aim at us, not even sideways aim. You know, laws that won't let us adopt children anymore, laws that are meant to limit our ability to get married, laws that limit which bathrooms we can use, not to mention the other laws that are, you know, the defunding of Planned Parenthood or the Affordable Care Act. All of these things disproportionately impact our community. And so this year, it's really important that we gather on the streets and that we march for our human and civil rights. And not just the LGBTQ community, we're inviting our allies too, and anyone who feels that their rights are under threat, immigrants of any status, dreamers, people of color, people of faith, join us, because together we can make a difference and we can keep progress instead of having regress.
Nice. It is my understanding that you pulled some incredible energy from the past to make this all happen, to inspire this all.
Yes. Well, I was sitting in bed in late January, basically on the heels of seeing what the women had achieved the day after the inauguration, and I was so impressed and so grateful that I just thought, maybe we can do something here. And I saw that there was actually going to be a march in Washington, D.C., and I'm 49 years old, and I've never been to one of them, but apparently they're incredible.
Yeah.
I checked my calendar and saw that it happened to be the same day as the L.A. Pride Parade, and it just felt odd to me that, you know, our brothers and sisters on the East Coast would be marching in Washington while we were sort of parading in L.A. So I just put on my own personal Facebook page that maybe we should march instead of parade. And unexpectedly, I got over 33,000 people who liked that post. Usually I get 50 likes, so 33,000 was crazy. And so that's how Resist March was born.
Now, I've actually been to L.A. Pride. You know, I've done the San Francisco to L.A. AIDS Ride, AIDS Life Cycle, so many times. And one year it finished.
Oh, good job.
Yeah, I love it. One year it finished in L.A. Pride, and I absolutely loved it. You know, you have all these people who have been going to L.A. Pride for so many different years. How do you draw people into an energy that might be a little bit different?
Well, look, wherever the LGBTQ community gathers, we tend to celebrate each other and gather strength from each other. So it's going to be uniquely LGBTQ anyway, which means, you know, it's happy, it'll be fun. But we're really having a focus on resisting all of these ideas that our rights are going to be taken away. It's important that we you know, act as a beacon for those, you know, that trans kid in Mississippi or that gay person of color that's in Missouri, that is hearing rhetoric that is making them, you know, think twice about their life and being a place on the horizon for them, like a beacon of hope. And so I think that people are really feeling it. Like, I just left the Los Angeles City Hall, where it's the kickoff of Pride Month, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people there, and they were all talking about marching. It's really inspired people to get back to our grassroots. I mean, in 1970, the first ever Pride Parade took place on Hollywood and Highland, and it was a protest. It was a commemoration of what took place in Stonewall the year prior. And so all we're doing is bringing it back to basics.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, I'm a big fan of projecting the energy that we want to see. Let's talk logistics. What do you hope happens on this day, right there on June 11th? What are you hoping to see?
I am hoping to see the largest, most significant, most intersectional, most unifying group the LGBTQ community has ever been able to assemble on Hollywood Boulevard. I want to stand on that corner, and I want to see people go back as far as the eye can see. And then I want us to move. I want the visual to be of us moving through the streets of Los Angeles, some of the busiest, most populated streets of Los Angeles, so that we're loud and we're proud and we're unifying and we're being that beacon of hope for that kid, and we're being that beacon of warning and resistance for people that would take our rights away.
Nice. I know a big piece of this puzzle has got to be media coverage, right? You want people around the world, you want that kid in Mississippi to see this. How do you approach this in a way that gets people to pay attention as they should be?
You know, already Los Angeles is the second largest media market in the country, so that we have that going for us. But then you invite people who've really done a lot of great work that inspire the press. I was just in Washington, D.C. last weekend and was able to confirm Leader Pelosi, Adam Schiff, and Maxine Waters to come out and reframe the national conversation. You know, Adam Schiff, whose district, Congressman Adam Schiff, whose district we're walking through the entire time, is the senior ranking member on the Intelligence Committee. And he's terrified of what's going on in Washington. So for him to come to us and address us about what's going on in Washington, I think will be important. And obviously, it'll be very newsworthy. And we have a lot of incredible speakers that we'll be announcing in the next few days.
Oh, there it is. I love hearing that. Now, you're going to get all these people to show up. It's going to be thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And I have no doubt you're going to activate them. But after June 11th, 2017, there's going to be June 12th, 2017. How do we direct that energy forward?
Well, first of all, it's not a sprint. It's a relay race. I mean, I wish it was a sprint. I really wish some of these, you know, ill-informed politicians were out of office tomorrow, but they're not going to be. So because it's a relay race, we need to continue to support those around us, not just the LGBTQ community, but our allies. And when they march, we march. But don't just march, run. If you've never thought about running for office, run for office. If you've never thought about volunteering for Project Angel Food, go help them because their money's in jeopardy because the Affordable Care Act is under threat. Help people with HIV. If you've never done it, go to one of your congressmen's, in district meetings, especially one who doesn't necessarily share your values, and ask them questions and hold them accountable. Call them and call your senator. Donate to charities or volunteer. It's not a one-size-fits-all model. And so we're hoping that, you know, through these conversations, people will find an activation that fits them.
Yeah. A few minutes ago, you said that magic I word, that I word of intersectional. How do we go about bringing together different parts of our community so that we can be as strong as possible on this day?
Well, the one magic thing about this march is that it is free. So it does not matter how much money you have. You can come be in the streets with us. And I think that in a lot of times, the economics are what stops people from participating in LGBTQ things. And so it's free. Also, I have, as has my committee, we've been crisscrossing the city and the state, inviting people, not just expecting that they're going to show up, but sitting down with them, sitting down with the API community and the African-American community, sitting down with veterans and the disabled community and saying, how can we make this reflect you? How can we want you, when you show up here on this march, to see yourself in the audience. We want you to see yourselves on stage, and we want you to see yourselves on the screens. But, you know, the biggest thing is just reaching out your hand and saying, you're invited to be with us. There's been a lot of magic in that. There's been a lot of, at least in Los Angeles, there's been an incredible amount of healing about that.
Nice. We have to get personal for a second, Brian. What are you getting out of being involved in this work? I would imagine it is most definitely feeding your soul.
It's definitely feeding my soul. It definitely fits on that, you know, be careful what you wish for. You might get it.
Because right.
I had no idea that when I posted on my Facebook page that it would become a 33,000 person, you know, audience instead of the 50 that usually pay attention to my boring posts. I'm meeting people I never would have had the opportunity to meet before. I'm hearing stories that absolutely inspire me. I'm reminded constantly that I have a ton of privilege and that I can share that privilege with people who have less than me. And quite frankly, for my personality, it fits. I love it. I love being of service. I love supporting these people, and I really want to make sure that they feel welcome and that they feel at home. Los Angeles is gigantic, and it's easy to be lost here. You'd be surprised at just like sort of what a warm smile and what a warm, meaningful hug means to people who are constantly fighting for their rights, constantly having to yell to get what they need.
Great. Brian, what can all of our listeners do to support Resist March?
Well, I mean, so anyone in Los Angeles, you know, go to resistmarch.org, tell us you're coming, get the newsletter, you get all the important information about logistics, tell your friends to come, take our social media assets and spread them around, you know, your own circle of influence. Those outside of Los Angeles, find the Resist March in your city and do it. You know, maybe it's not the LGBTQ community, maybe it's ACLU, maybe it's veterans. Join them. This year, more than ever, we need to put down any differences that we have and find commonality so that we can defeat these regressive ideas. We must resist transphobia, homophobia, and racism and really propel our country forward.
Nice. On June 11th, 2017, listeners, from Hollywood and Highland to West Hollywood, instead of a pride parade, there will be Resist March. You must go learn more about it. Stroll on over to resistmarch.org. That's resistmarch.org. If you can show up, show up. If you can plan one in your city, please do that. But at the very least, Brian, we are sending you guys and everybody out there in California just our best wishes. It's going to be an amazing day.
I'm so grateful for your time today. Thank you so much. No matter how many times I just can't seem to understand why I'm alone. I'm alone.
All right, folks, and we are back yet again. Now, if you thought, well, you've already had two guests on the show, you couldn't possibly have a third, you are wrong. We have a third guest on this week's episode. I couldn't even tell you the last time we had such a jam-packed episode, but here we are. Let me introduce him to you. Joseph Eid is an Americana singer-songwriter who we just love. He's known as a dynamic solo performer. He's brought his one-man live show to many of LA's premier music venues, including stints at Room 5 and El Cid, and residencies at the Stone Bar and Crane's Hollywood Tavern. He has also toured all over the flippin' place. His first full-length album is called Human. It's amazing. His latest EP is called Watch It Fall, and I just plain adore it. We're going to talk all about it. But first, Joseph, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be back.
It's been years, my friend, since you've been on the show. Years.
Time is being really weird with me lately. I just cannot believe it's been that long. It's just zooming by too fast.
Well, let's catch up our listeners to a little bit about you. Remind everybody, when little Joseph was running around, was he singing up a storm?
You know, he was always singing and dancing. Yes, this is true. But more so, he was writing a lot of poetry. Even I remember one of my earliest memories, like 5 or 6 years old, being away at the beach with my parents, writing a little poem about the weekend and being like, hey, Dad, can I share this with your friends? And just remember what that, you know, just remembering that feeling, what that felt like to share something that I had written. So the singing more professionally stuff didn't happen until much later. But I've always kind of just looked at the world in a certain way and felt like I wanted to write about it.
I love the idea. You were sitting on the beach. It started raining. You wrote a poem and now it's a song called Rain. Is that right?
Something like that.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Yeah. Now, as I mentioned in your intro, and we talked about this last time you were on the show, I've actually seen so many reviews. I have not seen you live, but I know a lot of people who have. And you have a sense, right, that you're known for how great you are on stage.
You know, it's such a great thing to hear now and such a feel, because it's been a road, you know, it's been a process. And it's been great. Like, LA's been great training ground for me, because when I moved here about 11 years ago, I just started hitting up open mics and just getting my chops up. And I knew that, you know, it wasn't good enough to just be good. You have to kind of really bring it, you know. And that's been a lot of fun to develop that and just feel really confident. So, yeah, it's great that people are writing that and people are experiencing that. Makes me very happy.
What's the difference between Joseph Eade on stage and off stage?
You know, not that much. And I think that's partly why maybe people connect with my live performances a lot, is because I feel like I get really personal on stage. Like, I don't really hold anything back. I get really into it. It's a very intimate show. And, you know, I talk about the songs. I break it down and I really connect with what I'm doing. So it's not like I go into this different character, you know. So the only difference is really I'm just singing and playing guitar on stage, but in real life I'm not walking around doing that.
In my head you are. In my head you are walking down the streets of LA. That is exactly what is happening.
I just meet somebody and I break into song. Hey, nice to meet ya. I sing you a song.
Does that work? By the way, I'll take that up if that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people would be a little bit like weirded out, especially in certain settings.
Okay. All right.
But we can try it.
All right. Let's do it. I'm picturing you in Whole Foods and you're just going up to people. It's great. It's wonderful stuff. Talk to me about one of those highs. I love hearing about those moments that our singer-songwriter friends just walk off stage and say, oh my gosh, that was amazing.
You know, there's been, I'm trying to think of like the most recent ones. It's funny. It's like, it's there's so many little moments like that, but a couple that stand out is like one of the most recent ones. I played at a bar downtown a couple weeks ago. It's called Bar Medicine. It's this cooler bar downtown. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect. They wanted me to play for about 3 hours. I didn't know anybody down there. But it just turned into such a beautiful, like, fun, intimate group of people singing along, requesting stuff, just laughing, having a great time, and just feeling like, you know, these strangers that I didn't know, you know, a couple hours before were all connected with me now, and we're all connected with each other, and we're all having, like, the best time. You know, little shows like that to, you know, going back to New York where I grew up and playing a show last summer for all my friends and family and their friends, and, you know, just seeing more and more people come out each summer just makes me so excited, because, you know, these people knew me from when I was super young and really wasn't doing this professionally. And to go back and be able to share all the music on that level and just show them the evolution and connect in that way is just, you know, that show was just so overwhelming and, you know, enjoyable for me.
What do you hope people get out of a Joseph Eade show? So they've listened to you, they've heard your original music. Maybe is there a cover thrown in every now and then?
Yeah, there's definitely covers thrown in. I usually, like, if the show is about 45 minutes or less, I might do, like, one cover.
Okay.
And usually it's a cover of something that, you know, is easily, you know, you would think that maybe, you know, oh, this sounds like something he would do. This is something that is really up his alley, goes with my music. If I'm playing, like, a three-hour show, which I do a lot for private events, weddings, corporate events, stuff like that, then you're going to hear half the set covers, you know, folk covers, pop covers thrown in with my music, you know. But usually if it's a show where my supporters are coming out specifically to see me, and I'm not just hired to do it, I'm actually, like, you know, on tour promoting my show, you're going to mostly hear original songs from the first album, this album, stuff I've written since this album, etc.
And so then you're done playing. How do you hope people feel at the end of one of your shows?
I think the most important thing for me, and what I've witnessed the most and kind of just gives me the biggest thrill, is that it makes people just feel better about everything. The songs are, sometimes when I write songs, seriously, they come from like this other place that is sometimes even bigger than me and, you know, what I thought I could write. And the songs teach me as I write them. And I sometimes go back and listen and go, whoa, wow, I just learned something from this song that, you know, I wrote. So it's kind of this thing of, it's got a little psychology behind it, little universal truths, little lessons here and there. So I've had people come up to me and just say, wow, like I really connected with that. That just makes me feel so much better about this situation that I went through. Or just, you know, just feel good, let go and forget about their own problems and know that, you know, we're all going through the same stuff. So it's, I guess the feeling is like therapeutic in a way. It's just uplifting.
Nice. You are appearing again on This Show Is So Gay. Let's talk about that part of your identity. How do you think your identity affects what it is you put out there to the world?
I like to think that it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because for me, I just never been known as a gay artist or a straight artist or whatever. You know, even though I'm gay, it's not something that I think is, you know, uniquely makes me who I am as an artist. You know, like I tell a lot of people, it's not, you know, I hate it when people say, oh, you know, a gay lifestyle or this and that. And I'm like, it's not a lifestyle. It's not a choice. It's not something you go, I'm going to live this lifestyle. It's just who you are.
Right.
You know, it's really basic. It's like your hair is brown, your hair is black. Like, you know, so for me, it doesn't really, I think, affect who connects with me, because I've got people connecting with me who are straight, who are over 60, who are gay, who are, you know, in their 20s, who are everything in between. So I like to think that my music's pretty universal. And that doesn't really, I think, you know, affect how people perceive me as an artist.
Nice. Nice. Again, listeners, we are here with Joseph Eade, singer-songwriter extraordinaire. Since we last talked, we have all of these new songs that are out there in the world. Tell everybody about Watch It Fall.
So Watch It Fall is definitely the follow-up to Human, which is a full-length album. And it's all songs that I wrote after I released Human at the end of 2013. So I've been writing since. And I wanted to do an EP because I want to be able to do another one in like a year or two and not have to wait so long. So I saved the other half of the songs for another project. But, you know, it's got a little bit of a darker tone, I think, than Human did. And it's not like at all depressing or anything. It's just, I think it goes a little bit deeper into examining this, like, how a path to chasing one's dreams or following one's purpose can sometimes be a little bit scary, a little bit dark. You can kind of experience a lot of emotions and the sacrifices that come with choosing to follow your heart. And that's kind of, I think, the gist of what this album is about and the message. But it kind of takes you through a journey, makes fun of, you know, I make fun of my own self and being kind of inept at relationships in the beginning of the album. And then towards the end, kind of transforming that when you get to the song One and Only, which is basically asking somebody to be your one and only. And then it finishes with a song called Let Me In, which is about trusting your inner voice.
In my head, again, you just walked up to someone in Whole Foods and you started singing Let Me In, and it worked.
And I got all my groceries for free.
Is that what we're calling it? That's amazing. I love that story. So what are we doing to support this EP? Are you out there playing? What's coming up?
Yeah, what's coming up is my first big show is going to be the CD release show in Los Angeles, which I'm super excited about. So if anybody knows anybody in LA or is coming here or lives here, please come out to that. That's going to be a great show. It's at a place called Molly Malone's. And I'm going to be playing with the full band that I recorded with, which is really exciting for me because usually I'm a one-man show. Usually I just play with my acoustic guitar. And this is going to be a full band, background singers, the whole thing. And then I'm going to be going to the East Coast in July, playing a show in New York City at Sidewalk Cafe on July 27th. And then doing some shows in Portland, Maine as well, where I have a little bit of a following up there too. So. And then, you know, in the fall, I'm thinking maybe a little Northwest tour. Got some places in Arizona I like to go play. So right now, it's just going to be about, now that this thing is out, I'm just going to be hitting the road and the stage and supporting it every way I can.
You left out the Cleveland House concert. When is that happening?
I'm ready. Who's doing it? Let's go.
We got to do it. We got to do it. I love some of the places. I love the Sidewalk Cafe as a lowly little NYU student. I was there all the time. And Portland, Maine is one of my favorite places in the country.
Oh, really? Yeah, I went there for the first time last summer because my best friend was up there. He's like, you got to come up here and do a show. It was a lot of fun. I really loved it. It's such a cool little city, great food and people and the whole thing. So definitely looking forward to going up there again.
Nice. And there's a little video that people can watch of you looking at different things on the beach.
Exactly. Oh, is this, which one are you talking about? Which video?
I'm looking at the promo video for Watch It Fall.
Oh, yeah. That's actually the one that I just put out this morning. I think that's the one you're talking about. And we actually shot that up in the Bat Caves. This is like the caves where they actually filmed the original Batman series. It happens to be like right up the street from where I live.
Nice.
In Hollywood. So it's really cool. I just posted it on my Facebook page this morning. It's a little promo for the CD. And that's where we shot the album cover too.
I love it. All right. Well, we have to finish, as we always do, with a little learning annex for our listeners. For our aspiring singer-songwriters out there who want to get those thoughts from their head to the page, give us some patented Joseph advice to move those things along.
I think the best advice that I give, just off the top of my head, if I had more time to think about this, I'm sure I could devise like an amazing blog about this, but the first thing that comes to my mind is just start. Just start. Because the biggest problem with writing and saying that you want to, you know, take these things and put them down on paper is that people just get so caught up in thinking about, well, how is this going to happen? How is it going to become a song? How am I going to make it work? Once you start and just let it all flow, don't censor yourself. Just write it all down. Your brain is super powerful. It will start to put it all together by itself. But the key is to start. And then once you start, you will be led to the next step, and to the next step, to the next step. But it is your job to just start somewhere and just go from there and just trust the process.
There it is. Listeners, Joseph Eid is a singer-songwriter. He has a new EP out that you must go check out. It's called Watch It Fall. I will say all of the songs are great, but I particularly love Starting Over. Am I allowed to have a favorite? That's okay, right?
Yes. I was actually going to ask you, so I'm glad you're volunteering that. That's cool.
That is, and at some point off the air, you'll tell me what the fact that that's my favorite song says about me, but we'll talk about that separately. You can, of course, stroll on over to josepheidmusic.com, J-O-S-E-P-H-E-I-D music.com, and of course, Watch It Fall and Human, all available right there, anywhere fine music is sold, or just go on iTunes, because that's where you can download things. Joseph, I love your music. You really are putting yourself out there in such an authentic way. I told you that years ago. It continues to be true. You have to keep doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you so much. That means the world, and your support means a lot to me, so I really appreciate that. The thick steel bars are compromised. You know they just confine me. Soggy. Oh, I'm so sorry. But this time it's me. Hell, it's always me. I just can't seem to comprehend the middle part after the start and right before the end of the story. Oh, I'm so sorry.
All right, folks, and we are back for a fourth time this episode. Not only do we have three guests, But we still have time left on this week's episode for some of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. I will do a little bit of shameless self-promotion and say that I wrote a new Huffington Post piece that you guys can all check out. It's called From Zero to Two, A Tale of Cleveland's Pride. If you will all remember from last summer, it was such a bizarre LGBTQ summer here in Cleveland last year. We had our Pride all set to go, and then Cleveland Pride Inc., which is the nonprofit that organizes our Pride here, they canceled it very suddenly. So all of a sudden we had no Pride. And right when we had no Pride, I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post that went crazy viral. I was not intending that. And then an organization here in Cleveland, a bunch of organizations under the direction of the LGBT Center of Greater Cleveland, put together Pride in the CLE, which was a substitute Pride. They put it together in like 8 or 9 days. It was the most incredible thing. And it wasn't on the same scale as the original Pride, but everybody came together. Well, this year, they're doing the second annual Pride in the CLE, so all the community organizations, and Cleveland Pride has popped up, and they've said, well, we're doing our Pride too. So all of a sudden, we have two Prides here in Cleveland, and there's a lot of confusion. I tried to ease that confusion by urging people through this piece in the Huffington Post to go to both Prides. This is a really unique opportunity for us, an opportunity to celebrate twice, to be political twice, to be intersectional twice. We love that, to be future-oriented twice. But let's do it. Let's take this opportunity and run with it. So you guys can check that out. It's called From Zero to Two, A Tale of Cleveland Prides. Now, let's get to some real news, although this isn't really real news. This is the most hilarious news that ever could have been written, and everyone was passing it around. A self-published quote-unquote study claims that eating too many fatty foods can cause homosexuality or make you transgender. Apparently, it's not genetics. It's eating too many fatty foods. Author Rita Starkosha, who says that she has a degree in clinical psychology from Albanian University, she sent the 56-page document to Pink News after self-publishing it as an ebook on Amazon. In the document, which she has also put up for free on her website, she attempts to link homosexuality to an unhealthy diet. The study claims this, quote, homosexuals often eat large amounts of high glycemic index foods and fat, or eating an imbalanced diet leaning towards carbohydrates. Some studies show an increased rate of obesity among homosexuals. Gay men, lesbian, and bisexual women report a higher odds of sugar-sweetened beverage consumption than straight men or women. Access to a high-calorie diet and alcoholic drinks was limited to the social elite circles in the past. Homosexuality as well appears to have been more frequent among that group. So she is tying homosexuality to fats, sugars, and alcohol. I had absolutely no idea. She then puts out a claim that cutting them out of your diet can, quote, prevent the return of homosexual attractions. Now, I have to tell you all, I don't eat a lot of fat. I don't eat a lot of sugar. I barely drink any alcohol. I'm still gay. So I guess I am an outlier with this quote-unquote study. That's funny. You gotta see that as funny. Happy Pride Month. Apparently chicken nuggets can make you gay. A wonderful display of LGBT pride from a high school student has been soured by the student's parents. Addis Cosita High School in Humble, Texas has never had a pride section in their annual yearbook, but this year's editor-in-chief, Kyle R. Moore, changed all that. The section, titled Prideful Eagles, featured coming-out stories. I love this! Coming-out stories in the yearbook from kids at the school, which ran the full gamut from heartbreaking to heartwarming. The moving gesture was ruined by none other than students' parents, who took to social media and a local forum to express their disgust. Natalie Mendoza, a senior, was one of those included in the LGBT section. She identifies as gay and Catholic and gave a senior quote that says this quote. This was her senior quote, "I can turn your girl." That's funny. That's hilarious. One parent wrote under the name Steeler Nation, said this quote, "That's jamming their crap down our throats." Another user said this quote, "We can't pray in school, but now we have a section strictly dedicated to the gay community explaining how, when, and why they came out. I'm honestly disgusted and embarrassed." Well, Mendoza, that student who said, "I can turn your girl," I love that, said this quote, "My friends know my sexual orientation and love and respect me regardless." So a section there in the yearbook, apparently making some people angry. The school briefly halted distribution of the yearbooks and moved to censor the so-called offensive parts, but then they U-turned and decided to hand out the books as planned. They tweeted this, the high school tweeted this, "We are releasing the yearbooks in their original form." Look at that. If that's not a sign of progress, I have absolutely no idea what is. A section in this Texas high school yearbook dedicated to coming out stories. And again, the quote from that one student, "I can turn your girl." She almost turned me just with that, but it could be because I ate some fatty foods today, which I didn't really. A Republican congressman has broken ranks with his party to support a bill to introduce LGBT non-discrimination protections. The Equality Act, which was reintroduced to Congress earlier this year, would introduce federal-level protections against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. At current, the issue is only covered by a patchwork of some states that have laws, many states don't, meaning that in more than 30 states, it is still legal to fire people for being gay. In more than 30 states. The law has amassed the support of nearly 200 Democrats in the House and 43 in the Senate, but Republicans have been reluctant to back the law. To date, the only Republican to openly declare support was Florida Representative Ileana Roslatinen, who is not seeking re-election in 2018. However, another Republican has this week agreed to co-sponsor the law. Republican Scott Taylor, the member of the U.S. House of Representatives from Virginia's 2nd District, announced he would become a co-sponsor. He said this, quote, "Discrimination anywhere is an injustice. I'm proud to support the Equality Act and will work to ensure that all are treated the same under the law." I love that. He said this again, "Discrimination anywhere is an injustice. I'm proud to support the Equality Act and will work to ensure that all are treated the same under the law." I guess what just kills me on this one is that it's such a story that a Republican has broken ranks to say something like discrimination anywhere is an injustice. But apparently that's where we are. We are that divided right now. The Human Rights Campaign's Government Affairs Director David Stacey said this, quote, "The growing support for the Equality Act by Republicans, Democrats, and Independents proves that LGBTQ equality is not a partisan issue. All Americans should have a fair chance to earn a living, provide for their families, and live their lives without fear of discrimination. We are grateful for Representative Scott Taylor's leadership and support for this crucially important legislation that will finally ensure LGBTQ people are protected from unjust discrimination." So, well done, Representative Taylor. It shouldn't be such a huge story, but we recognize that it is a big story for a Republican to come out and say, "Hey, I support non-discrimination protections." Shouldn't be a big story. It is. It absolutely is. Google, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and others urge Texas. Let's turn our attention back to Texas. It's not just about these great sections in yearbooks, but also there are people who have to urge Texas, all these big companies urging them to not adopt a discriminatory anti-trans bathroom bill. If this bill is approved by the governor, anti-LGBT legislation in Texas would require a trans person to only use public bathrooms corresponding with their sex at birth. The tech companies have lobbied against the proposal, and they have written a letter to Texas Governor Greg Abbott demanding him to stop pursuing the bill. The letter was signed by the CEOs of Amazon, Facebook, IBM, Apple, Microsoft, Gearbox Software, Google, Celanese Corporation, Salesforce, Cisco, GSD&M, Silicon Labs, Dell Technologies, and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. The CEOs wrote this, quote, "We are writing to express our steadfast opposition to the introduction and passage of any discriminatory legislation in Texas. Such laws are bad for our employees and bad for business." How are they not learning from the example of that Carolina that passed the similar legislation? North Carolina lost billions of dollars. Was it billions? It was definitely hundreds of millions. I think it was billions of dollars for the same stupidity. And here you have these tech giants saying, you will lose our business if you do this. Don't do this. And yet they still might do it. That's happening in Texas. Let's turn our attention to Nevada. The governor of Nevada has signed a bill that codifies same-sex unions into state law. You would think, well, heck, wasn't there that Supreme Court case that already decided this? Yes, of course that was. The Supreme Court case, that would be the law of the land. But still, so many states have outdated legislation that says, no, you cannot be a same-sex couple here and get benefits. Well, we are approaching the second anniversary of that Supreme Court ruling, which brought same-sex marriage to all 50 states. And in Nevada, some progress came this week after the state's governor signed a bill altering their laws to reflect that marriage is open to same-sex couples. The state's moderate Republican governor, Brian Sandoval, signed the law, which was sponsored in the Nevada Assembly by Democrat Nelson Araujo. The law amends state regulations to refer to marriage as between two persons, regardless of gender, rather than between one man and one woman. The small change has little impact beyond tightening up state law, but it may be a long time before others follow suit. It has been more than 15 years since the 2003 court ruling, which struck down anti-gay sodomy laws. But even though that happened in 2003, plenty of states never removed their invalid laws from the books. This is important to do things like that. Let's bring the laws current. Yes, the law of the land is the Supreme Court, but let's also have our state laws say what the law of the land is. It makes a difference. A great picture went around this week, and also a great act, as President Obama's Vice President Joe Biden has shown Mike Pence what a real vice president is supposed to look like. The 74-year-old, who has been honored for his fierce support of LGBT rights, played a role in a couple's wedding over the weekend. Mr. Biden officiated the ceremony for a Democratic staffer, the Democratic National Committee Finance Chair Henry Munoz, and his partner Kyle Ferrari. It's a great, great picture of Senator Biden officiating. It is also a stark contrast to Vice President Pence. Well done, Vice President Biden. A woman who claims to have married a train station, that's right, a woman who claims to have married a train station, insists her sexuality is just like being gay. It's not just fatty foods, folks. It's also like marrying a train station. 45-year-old Carol made a splash last week with her claim that she is married to a San Diego train station. She explained this, quote, "Most people know this building as the Santa Fe Depot, but I know her as my friend, my life partner, my wife, Deidre Santa Fe." And she's saying that she's been in love with the station since she was a young girl. And she's saying it is our sexuality. It's just like being a lesbian or bisexual. We are not crazy. So yeah, chicken nuggets, train stations. That's apparently what I'm covering on this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Lastly, a Republican claims that the state will balance their health care costs by slashing the budget for transgender care. Senator Robert Carnes of West Virginia, he said that the billions of dollars that might be lost in the cuts to Medicaid will not be an issue if the state stops covering transgender surgery. So all of you out there who think, well, gosh, we're not going to get thrown under the bus. We are going to get thrown under the bus. That is the plan. It's not good for the LGBT community. And you guys have to raise your voices and make a difference. You cannot be silent. So that's what this week's episode was all about. Look at all the people we featured who are using their voices. Our hero, Evan Wolfson, and the incredible work he has done for marriage equality. A true, true hero of the fight for LGBTQ equality. Unbelievable. Unbelievable guy. Brian Pendleton, what great work out there in California. Resist March. Go check that out. And of course, to Joseph Eid, he is using his voice to make incredible music and making us all pause and listen. Go support him. You guys, get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference. And while you're out there helping your brothers and sisters in the LGBTQ community, helping those allies out there who are working on our behalf, please, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?